One world currency.
The new world order.
Those are the roots of trouble.
I imagine that right now you're feeling a bit like Alice, tumbling down the rabbit hole. Let me tell you why you're here. You're here because you know something. What you know you can't explain, but you feel it. You felt it your entire life. That there's something wrong with the world. You don't know what it is, but it's there, like a splinter in your mind, driving you mad. It is this feeling that has brought you to me. This is your last chance. After this, there is no turning back. You take the blue pill, the story ends. You wake up in your bed and believe whatever you want to be. You take the red pill, you stay in Wonderland, and I show you how deep the rabbit hole goes. All I'm offering is the truth, nothing more.
For we are opposed around the world by a monolithic and ruthless conspiracy that relies primarily on covert means for expanding its sphere of influence, on infiltration instead of invasion, on subversion instead of election, on intimidation instead of free choice, on guerrillas by night instead of armies by day. It is a system which has conscripted vast human and material resources into the building of a tightly knit, highly efficient machine that combines military, diplomatic, intelligence, economic, scientific, and political operations. Its preparations are concealed, not published. Its mistakes are buried, not headlined. Its dissenters are silenced, not praised. No expenditure is questioned, no rumor is printed, no secret is revealed. But I am asking your help in the tremendous task of informing and alerting the American people.
And now, welcome to another episode of Down the Rabbit Hole. Here's your host from FederalJack.com. It's Popeye.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to another live edition of DTRH. It is February 12th, 2015. Before I get into the show tonight, since I won't be live tomorrow night, I just want to say that tomorrow is Marseille's birthday. It would have been her 34th birthday. So it is in her honor tonight that I expose this dark and evil stuff, because she didn't like this. This is one topic that when I got into, it actually made her physically ill when I would discuss it with her. So because it's her birthday tomorrow, and it's Friday the 13th, she was actually born on Friday the 13th, it's in her honor that I dedicate this broadcast tonight. So anyway, tonight I'm going to be getting into, as I said, some dark evil stuff. The dark satanic occult. How they feel about their pets, the military, the police. How they feel about you and me. They call us the walking dead, the living dead. You wonder why there's so many zombie movies and shows out there. I wonder who they think the survivors in the TV show or the survivors in the movies are supposed to be modeled after. Anyway, it's not you, ladies and gentlemen. It's them. They consider themselves to be surviving inside of a zombie apocalypse, so to speak. Anyway, we're going to get all into this with my guest tonight. I don't want to waste any more time. My good friend, Mr. Mark Passio. Mark, welcome back to the broadcast.
Popeye, thank you so much for inviting me back onto Down the Rabbit Hole. It's always a pleasure to be on the show.
Brother, it's been too long since I had you on, and I can't think of anybody else to get into this evil, dark stuff with other than you. I mean, you were a former low-ranking Satanist, but you realized what was going on, and you hit the eject button, and then you did what not many people would have the balls to do. You proceeded to start to megaphone the world about what was going on and what these people do. And this is, let's not joke about this. I mean, let's not try to, you know, sugarcoat it. What you talk about, and when we discuss this stuff, this is some evil stuff. This could get you killed. The stuff you know and the stuff you talk about could get you killed. It puts you in a very dangerous position. So before we even get into it and get sidetracked, for the rest of the world and myself, I want to thank you for having the balls to do what you do, brother, because this stuff needs to get talked about.
I really deeply appreciate that vote of confidence, Pop. I don't really think that the dark occultists who I formerly worked with in my past really consider what I'm doing much of a threat, if at all, to what they are doing in the world, to their, you know, hegemony, to their firmly entrenched power. They don't really see anything that I'm capable of doing as a threat. I don't know whether that's hubris on their part or whether they really know how deeply they do have the mindset of most of the people of the world, and don't really look at it as as possible to take people out of the mind control that they are already in. When I first got out, I kind of thought about things like, you know, will people try to come after me for what I'm about to do? And now I just don't even really consider it at all for, you know, a number of reasons. Really, one of them, the first thing is what I just said. I don't really think they consider what I'm doing a threat. Two, even if they did, I think that standing in truth is the best method of protection that anyone could afford themselves of. And I think those who stand firmly in the truth and speak it to other people and are trying to inform people about what is going on in our world and why this is a situation of slavery, and it deeply needs to change from a spiritual perspective, from a spiritual point of view, a moral point of view. I think the people who are involved in that battle to bring that deeply needed and heretofore occulted or hidden information to the people of the world, they gain an amount of protection from the universe itself, as far as I'm concerned. So for those two reasons alone, I don't see myself in any appreciable danger or threat against anything that they could do to me. And I've often said on my own show, even if they did try to take me out of the physical domain, my consciousness is going to be back here and continue to do the great work of exposing the evil that's going on this planet and speaking the truth to other people so that they can learn and grow in consciousness no matter what happens to me physically.
Yeah, they can't kill an idea, brother. They can't stop it. And honestly, their underestimation of you is good. That's what they've done to us all along. You know, they've underestimated the general public because they really think we are stupid. And I can get it because I've talked to you about this. You go to Walmart at, you know, 1 o'clock in the morning, to a 24-hour Walmart, not even at 1 o'clock in the morning. You can go at 9 o'clock at night or 4 o'clock in the afternoon. You look at humanity, you see Black Friday, people stepping over each other while they're having a heart attack to get to the next TV or Xbox or PlayStation. I understand how they could have that arrogance about them. But see, I have more faith in humanity, Mark. I, just like you do, I know, I understand the true potential that humanity has inside of itself. It just needs to be awakened.
Yeah, there's definite potential there. It's a matter of people getting off of the brainwashing box in their living room, you know, the television watchers out there. And another big mental influence is that the power that religion still holds over the minds of the people of this world. You know, it's like that's the dialectic. The dialectic is all of the religious followers and then all of the total secular humanist atheist type people out there, the scientism worshipers. You know, they've basically divided the world into these two religious denominations. You have cultural religion like Christianity, Judaism, Hinduism, Buddhism, etc. on one side of the fence, and on the other side of the dialectic you have all the left brain quote religions, you know, the people who believe in social Darwinism, the people who believe in nothing essentially and think that man is the highest power in creation, you know, and people who just believe in science as the only, discoverable, the only thing that is possible to discover truth through. And, you know, you have that split, that divide, the super right-brained on one side with cultural religion and then all the left-brain religions on the other side. Both of those things are holding back the bulk of the people of the world from the truth, and they have to free their minds from all of those ideologies which aren't allowing them to see how they're controlled, aren't allowing them to understand that these are all just methodologies of controlling the mind. And, while their minds are controlled and they're put off onto erroneous belief systems about what is real in nature, then the people who are giving them these false belief systems are ruling over them, because once they have the mind, they have their behaviors. And then it becomes a piece of cake for them to basically turn those people into their willing slaves, because they don't even understand how they're controlled mentally, you know, and they think that they're free. And that's the most dangerous form of slavery, is a form of slavery that is essentially occulted or hidden from people's minds, because they believe erroneously that they're free. They believe that they're thinking their own thoughts, and they're believing in their own belief systems, when in fact these belief systems were just handed to them and given to them by people who, you know, have been doing this for tens of thousands of years, and who have it down to a science, a mind control. Their forms of mind control are essentially down to a complete science.
And that's why I say the only solution to this whole thing is a change of perspective. That's the solution. Everybody wants to know, what's the solution to this problem? What's the solution to that? The umbrella solution is a change of perspective. If we all stopped looking at each other the way we look at each other, if we stopped allowing this division and we realized that we're all equal, the cops, you guys aren't better than anybody. You're not a special class of citizen. Get over yourselves. Military, same thing. Get over yourselves. Okay? Citizens, regular citizens of this country, stop being divided over politics, sexuality, religion. These are all methods of control that they push and they tweak. They use it like a marionette puppet. They move it back and forth to get you to follow it, get emotionally attached to it, and chase it around and argue over it. And you're not paying attention to what's really going on. Change of perspective. If we all started just like, you know, I constantly preach, be the change, right? My late wife, it was how she actually lived her life. I did a whole show about it. Go look it up. It's called The Legacy of Marseille. Okay? Like, if everybody just actually lived their life to actually change the world for a better place, just living in that frame of mind, that context, you know how fast things would change? Boom. Overnight. They would become irrelevant.
Popeye, it's a very unpopular idea, because people want to be told specific actions that they can do to make a change happen. They don't want to be taught that their mindset is screwed up and the whole problem lies in the way that they think. No one wants to hear that. That's the most difficult thing for anyone to hear, is that there's something broken with your thinking that's leading the slavery system to continue. No one wants to hear that. That's the most unpopular thing you could possibly tell anybody. You know, they want the easy answer. They want, tell me the simple action that I can repeat like a trained monkey, and somehow the world will magically be free. Well, sorry, folks, it doesn't work like that. It works by aligning your thinking to what is actually real, what is actually the case in nature, the truth, in other words. No one wants to hear that. They want to hear that they already know what they need to know. You know, they already understand everything that they need to understand to get by and make some type of positive change happen. You know, they don't want to understand there are requirements in the mind that need to be changed, that need to be adjusted. As you said, their perspective needs to be adjusted. The lens through which they see the world is not working properly. Their perception is out of alignment with what is true, with what is real. And that's a very, very unpopular thing for anyone to hear, especially when it's coming from someone else. See, mostly my change in perspective didn't come from other people telling me that I was incorrect about what I was previously thinking. How it came about was through direct suffering as a result of the way that I was thinking. And as my thinking continued along that old path, okay, from the dark occult perspective that I came from, which was another religion, just like any of the other religions out there, just like the cultural religions, you know, or what people would refer to as the world religions, just like the monetary system is a religion, just like government or the belief in authority in anywhere vested in man at all, anywhere on the earth, that's a religion, the religion of authority, just like scientism or, you know, government grant funded science, quote unquote, is a religion. These are all just things that hold people back. You know, when I was in my religion of dark occultism, of Satanism in particular, what led me to get out of that mindset was suffering so much as a result of the mindset that I continued to cling to, that I finally somehow became aware that it was my thinking that was the problem, and the way that my thinking was driving my behavior, was subsequently driving my behavior, that was the problem. And when I decided to readjust that and come and let go of my attachment to those former ways of thinking, then the result changed. The actual consequence that I was receiving in my life experience changed for the better. So I saw it experimentally, experientially in the world as a result of changing my mind, my life, the quality of my life changed. This is what most people refuse to go through. They don't want to do it. And unfortunately, in many cases, it is because they have not yet suffered enough. They haven't hit rock bottom. People are still too comfortable in their, you know, houses with their, you know, two or three garages and, you know, fancy foreign cars and, you know, all kinds of amenities of modern living, of modern life. And so they don't want to think about the suffering of other people. They don't want to think about the injustice going on. They don't want to understand that, you know, less than 1% of human beings own almost 99% of the entire wealth of the world. You know, it doesn't make a difference to them because, you know, I have my little box that I call my home. I have my little mobile box cart that I call my car. I go to my job. I live the same day over and over and over again, but I'm given my pittance. My little pittance of comfort as a result. You know, I get my salary and I can live this, you know, modest lifestyle that I say I want, that, you know, I say makes me feel fulfilled or comfortable, but people are really ultimately full of it. You know, it's like the way that people are living is no way to live. It's a form of slavery. It's debt slavery, and it's slavery through monotony of living the same day over and over and over again. And, you know, people are really deeply, deeply empty inside, that, you know, and they just don't want to admit that to themselves. They don't want to admit that they're slaves because they can't admit that they were duped into buying this entire system, this entire completely immoral system that just exploits people and turns people into robots. They don't want to hear that they need to change their mindset regarding the entire system and then subsequently change their behavior regarding supporting this system in any way. But that's a very unpopular notion. People want to just hear there's one thing that you could do to make the world suddenly change and become free overnight. And sorry, folks, it doesn't work that way. The one overarching thing that you need to do is to change and to free your mind. Your mindset has to be changed. And that is all about your erroneous belief systems that you stubbornly cling to. And, you know, I'm talking to everybody out there. Everybody guaranteed still has some things that they are stubbornly clinging on to as being necessary or required, or coming up with some kind of justifications why they have to continue what they are doing. And I can't think of any better example than the topic that we really wanted to cover tonight, police. You know, the idea that these people are necessary in our society, the idea that the job they do is somehow so required of humanity. And it would just be such a even more horrific place without these people doing what they are doing. You know, and this is all about the abdication of responsibility, because people don't want to look after themselves and their own communities. They want somebody else to sanitize it and do it for them, because they are lazy people who don't want to learn the difference between right and wrong. And they don't want the responsibility to actually clean up their own space. That's what it ultimately comes down to. And then they pump this idea into these people's heads who are on this crazy power trip that they're on, that they're so wonderful and that they're so required and necessary for our wonderful way of life that we have, that that's so peaceful and is so violence-free somehow, when really there's coercion and violence around every corner, and it's called government.
And they do look at them like they're pets. I mean, you actually, again, and we're going to get into the dark, you know, occult, the dark satanic occult stuff later on. But when you were involved at a lower level, you saw people at higher level, and you heard their conversations, you were around them, and you heard them refer to police and the police and military as their dogs, their pets.
I was acutely aware then, and I have become even more absolutely certain. It's not my belief system that all of the police forces in the entire United States are owned by Satanists. They are owned and run by people who are involved in dark occultism without any question in my mind. The way that they spoke about them as a group, as an entity, was that as property. Property. Okay, that's the best way that I could explain it to somebody, that we completely own these people because we own their minds so completely, so wholly. They felt that they had such a grip on the minds of the people who work in law enforcement that even if they, a Satanist once told me at a ritual after the ritual was concluded, and we were socializing afterward amongst ourselves, a high-level Satanist who was one of the people who was involved in the hosting of this ritual once told me that even if they themselves, the dark occultists, the Satanists, the dark Luciferians, okay, were to come out publicly and tried to explain to the police and military the extent to which they completely own those institutional bodies, okay, and direct the thoughts, the thought processes of the people who were involved in those institutional bodies. They said, if we came out, we ourselves who are doing this to these people, came out and tried to explain to the very people whom we are putting in this mindset that we own them, that we have done this to their mindset, and tried to explain how we did it, they still would not accept it from us. That's how completely our mind control and brainwashing works upon their minds. And I believe them. I don't think that they're lying. I don't think that they're, you know, dissembling or trying to, you know, make up and, you know, say that they're so much more powerful than they really are. I accept that as true. Now, people might say, oh, you know, you give them too much credence or credit. I don't think so. I think they know fully exactly what they've done to the minds of people. And they know once somebody has bought into a belief system to such an extent, they're gone. Their soul is gone, and they have it completely, possibly for the rest of their lives. Now, I don't think it's every person within those institutional bodies, but I think they have the vast majority is the word, the phrase I would use if I had to make some kind of a guesstimate. I would say it's probably in the above 90 percentile of the amount of people whose minds are wholly owned in those institutions. Now, I think the only way that they may come out of those, that mindset, is if they suffer horrifically in a way that they can scarcely even conceive right now. I think their level of suffering has to be so intense that, you know, something breaks in their brain. You know, they're shattered internally somehow. That's how it happened for me. You know, I didn't go easily. I went kicking and screaming and, you know, clawing my fingernails into the floor as I was being dragged away from this belief system. And I think that's what it's going to take for most people. I think they have to go through that long, dark night of the soul, and they have to suffer in unimaginable, unheard of ways before they finally, their ego finally breaks.
See, that's what the problem is. It's the ego. And that's where the police and military, that's where they've got them, because they've got them actually believing that they are that costume. That yep. They, and like, it's just a costume, guys. You put on a Halloween costume is all it is. You drive around in a glorified Barbie car, okay? It's a glorified Hot Wheels car. That's all you're driving around in, and it's a friggin' Halloween costume. It doesn't give you any power. Or, in fact, the only thing that the only thing the costume actually does is it keeps people at bay because of the power behind that costume, because of what that costume represents. It's not really you. If you took it off, like if they took it off, Mark, and walked the same beat, right, in their own personal car, with no gun, no badge, and no ticket book, and no police car, do you think they'd get away with the stuff they get away with?
Popeye, that's perfect proof that the only thing that allows them to get away with what they get away with is a belief system or a religion. This is a religion. The belief in authority is a religion. It is a cult-like belief system that has no basis in nature. The fundamental issue that is going on in these people's minds that they are completely attached to as a religious belief, their fundamental religious belief is this. Some people have rights that other people do not have. That is the fundamental axiomatic belief system that is shared by all of the members of the cult called the Believers in Authority. It is a cult. It is a religious cult. And there is no one who will ever make that statement untrue. That's the reality of the situation. It doesn't make a difference how much anybody believes otherwise. That's the truth. The belief in authority is a religious cult that at the very basis of the cult belief system is this belief that rights, that everyone does not have the exact same rights, that rights are not shared equally among everyone, that some people have rights that other people do not have.
Right.
And that is a fundamental untruth.
And they're the enforcers of that myth. I'm going to pause this right there because the break's sneaking up.
Sure.
And by the way, you're correct about the cult reference when it comes to the law enforcement society there, because look at their backers. When you say, oh, you know, there's police brutality is out of control. Look at the vile things that's spewed forth from their mouth, just like a bunch of cult followers. So, very good point, Mark. Very good reference. Ladies and gentlemen, stay there. We'll be right back. We are back, ladies and gentlemen. So, I want to get right back into it. I don't want to waste any more time. Mark, during the break, we're going to get into symbolism in a second, but during the break, I brought up a point that I wanted to bring up on air to you, and it was something I mentioned earlier, and I wanted to expand on it a little bit with you. The powers shouldn't be as you, by the way, ladies and gentlemen, marked where I ripped that off from. I have to give credit where credit is due because I use it all the time, and people are like, oh, Papa, you came up with that gem. No. I have to give credit where credit's due. I stole it from Mark here.
Oh, and I got it from Bob Tuscan, so I can't take credit for that either. I'm not sure if he coined it or got it from someone else, but who knows?
Probably, yeah, and I'm sure he ripped it off from somewhere else. So it doesn't matter. We've passed that one down from person to person. So, the powers that shouldn't be, I keep seeing these zombie films, zombie TV shows like The Walking Dead, all these movies over the course of time about zombies, and a lot of people are convinced that it's predictive programming. Oh my God. It's, you know, some post-apocalyptic future. I don't think that's what that is. I actually think it's them mocking us. And I told you this during a break because they call the general public the dead. So I see the Walking Dead, the Living Dead, all of these different zombie movies and TV shows as mocking the general public. The general public are the zombies. And I honestly think that the survivors in these TV shows and in these movies are somewhat, well, at least in their imagination, based off of them. Their survivors are supposed to represent them surviving this crazy zombie apocalypse. And where are the zombies in the apocalypse?
Absolutely. I definitely concur with your analysis there, Popeye. When I was involved in the dark occult in Satanism, they never talked about the public or the people or anything like that or citizens. No one was ever referred to any terms like that. The only way that I ever heard higher up level dark occultists refer to the everyday person as, everyday people as, was the dead. They used the phrase the dead to refer to these people. And their rationale was this. If the components of human consciousness are our thoughts, our emotions and our actions, the three ways that we essentially express ourselves, the quality of ourselves to anyone else. And the general public doesn't have a drop of real holistic intelligence because they don't know the truth. They don't know about what's going on in their lives or around them. Okay. They don't know what's being done to them. Then they're not really thinking individuals. So somebody who is completely ignorant and not paying attention doesn't have that aspect of consciousness developed or active. The general public is largely apathetic. They don't care about what's going on. Not only don't they know, they don't care. And if their emotions aren't put toward, you know, understanding the truth, and their care isn't used to drive them to know about what's going on, then they could be said to be completely apathetic and or uncaring. So therefore, they don't have that second aspect of consciousness developed, the emotions, the emotional aspect, the emotional qualities. And of course, if they don't know and they don't care, they're not going to be doing anything to really create positive change in the world. So they're lazy and cowardly and inactive. Their actions are dead. They don't have any willpower to actually put what they want to see in life into manifestation. So if their thoughts, their emotions, and their actions are deadened, are inactive, are not developed, that person, that being, or that society that is formed by the aggregate of those beings could be said to be dead. They're not really alive because they don't have the three aspects of what it means to be conscious or awake or alive. And so that's how these dark occultists refer to these people, as they call them the dead. Zombie movies and the zombie archetypal theme in general of the zombie is absolutely an allegory for totally unconscious, asleep people who are sleepwalking, who are essentially dead because they don't have any aspect of their consciousness developed, thought, emotion, and action. They're ignorant, apathetic, lazy, and cowardly, and therefore, for all intents and purposes, they could be seen as the dead, and that's why they refer to them as such.
And that's why I see these zombie TV shows and movies as them mocking the general public, and the general public doesn't even realize it.
They don't even understand the allegory because they have no frame of reference to base it upon, because most of them have no experience with occultism at all, let alone dark occultism. So they don't understand what these people refer to the public as. And, you know, so they can't see the allegory. They think it's some science fiction thing, or it's about some, you know, outbreak of a disease or something that's going to infect the whole population. You know, that they never explain how some of these people aren't affected. You know, it's the vast majority, and this represents there's only a tiny minority who is awake, does understand what's going on, is conscious, is caring, is active, does know, and is doing something to try to rectify the situation. Now, in this, in the, all these instances, it's usually pitting that one group against the other. You know, they're not trying to really look for a solution to try to wake the dead up from their trance. You know, it's about that they have to do away with them somehow. You know, that's all about pitting a divide between people more and more, instead of actually getting them to help to transform them and bring them back from the dead, bring them back from to life, from the grave, to resurrect them in consciousness from a deadened consciousness, a state of consciousness or a state of unconsciousness, to a state of awakened or enlightened consciousness. That's what the whole allegory of resurrection is also about. And you see this in different occult traditions and mystery tradition teachings, the concept of resurrection or raising from the dead.
So since we're in this vein of symbolism, I would say this is a perfect segue to get into some of the symbolism. And again, I would reiterate the point that these movies, this is one of the reasons I don't watch this stuff anymore, because I have a better understanding of it now. So like, when I watch it, it's actually like I'm being insulted, and I'm like, well, screw you. I'm not like that. I'm not a zombie. I'm not disconnected from reality or myself or my true being or my soul. And I know humanity, there's plenty of people that aren't either. So to me, it's kind of like, I understand people use it as a getaway, but to me, it's kind of like a kick in the face, you know, from a bully It's like they're poking fun at you and pointing and laughing to their friends. And I find it utterly disgusting because I don't consider people to be zombies. I don't consider people to be mindless flesh bags. That's what they look at you as, ladies and gentlemen. I'm just saying, it's not me. These aren't my words. I'm not the one that calls the police or military. They're pets. Remember, I used to have a set of dog tags on my neck, but I'm no one's friggin' pet. I can tell you that right now. Why do you think they don't like veterans? Because veterans have a better understanding of things. That's why they don't like vets. They like guys that haven't joined the military yet or are just in the military. But they don't like guys that are seasoned vets or that are out because they have a better understanding that, hey, wait a minute. We were used and abused and thrown away. That's why vets are labeled terrorists, huh? Oh, because maybe they have a different perspective. There's that word again, Mark, perspective. It's all about a change of perspective, ladies and gentlemen. That's what the term, be the change, when you know, Gandhi said, be the change you wish to see in the world. I look at that as be the change. Literally, that's a change of perspective. You have to live that change. I actually believe in it so much, okay, that I'm actually, next week, I'm having it tattooed on the side of my throat. Okay, you think I'm kidding. I'm not. I'm having it tattooed on the side of my throat because those are conversation starters. Okay, when people ask me, I mean, it's going to say, be the change. And when people ask me what that means, it will allow me to engage them in this conversation about enlightening themselves. I actually believe in it that much. That's how much I actually believe in the concept of changing your perspective and living in it. Okay? I challenge you all to do the same. Don't be the dead. Don't be the zombies that they talk about. End of rant. So anyway, Mark, let's get into symbolism. The symbolism that's used in reference to like the police and the military, I just want to point out maybe one or two examples, or if you have a few more, that's fine, of that like blatant examples of it to drive this point home to the police and the military themselves. Because I think they need to hear this. They need to have this driven home so they understand you're not better than anybody else. In fact, your masters look at you like you're worse than the rest of us.
Yes.
Because you're willing to do the things you do to your fellow human beings for a dollar or for the false sense of security that they give you. So go ahead. The floor is yours.
You know, some of the things that they put directly onto police and military regalia, uniforms, you know, they're worn by the people involved in these institutions, are symbols that come directly out of dark occultism and Satanism in particular. Directly, they are putting occult symbols on these individuals. One of the biggest ones that they place on them is inverted pentagrams. You'll see this in some police department badges. Okay, like the Victoria Police. It's an inverted pentagram and it's upholding the British crown. Okay, and it says uphold the right. And that doesn't mean uphold the rights of the people. It means uphold the rights of the crown. You know, they're being used by these people to basically protect them, to protect this royalty, to protect this oligarchy, to protect this, you know, corporatocracy, or what I call the occultocracy. You know, that's what we live in. We live in an occultocracy. We live in a society that is ruled by occultists, you know, by a hidden elite that understands more about the human psyche than anybody else in the world, and therefore understands how to manipulate the mind of the public to get them to put themselves into chains for them. You know, you'll see this often placed directly on the forehead. They don't just wear it as a badge like on over the heart in many cases. You know, they'll put it over these areas of energy within the human body. You know, one of them is the heart. So that's why a badge is worn near the heart. You know, another place that they'll put it is on their hats. Whatever type of hat they may wear, they'll put it on the front of the hat so that it's right near the part of the brain, the prefrontal cortex of the brain, which is where the morality center of a being is. So they're putting a satanic emblem that resonates with satanic energy over the part of the brain that could develop morality. I mean, just think about the symbolism involved in that. You're taking a symbol. The inverted pentagram represents duality and conflict raised above the union of the Trinity. That's why there's 2 points upward out of the five and 3 points downward. So you're taking the concept of the Holy Trinity and you're putting that down while you're raising up the two horns of duality. You know, I don't see how you could get any more satanic than that. That's why it's used as a satanic emblem or symbol. That's where that imagery comes from. It's the idea that the goat's head fits inside of the five-pointed inverted star with the two horns sticking up. You know, the bull or the goat. You know, these are symbols, satanic symbols that have always resonated with dark occultism. Then those 3 points that are down represent thought, emotion, and action, the real Trinity. You know, you could look at it as the quote religious Trinity, but that's just a symbolic allegory about the three aspects of ourselves. You have the thoughts, which is like the creative aspect. Then you have the divine mother or the Holy Spirit, the sacred feminine component of the consciousness, which is the emotions. Okay. The heart. And then you have the actions. That's the male byproduct. That's why it's always a male child in the Trinity, because the thoughts and emotions come together as the father and the mother figure. They are wed together, and then they have the offspring, which is the actions of the individual, which is a male or masculine quality. And that's why those are the three aspects of the Trinity, thoughts, emotions, and actions. Now, those are put down, and then the duality of playing sides off against each other, of conflict. Okay. And these people being required to be in their positions of authority to resolve that conflict is raised up above. And that's the diametrically opposing forces that keep the crown in its place, which sits between those two upward pointing, triangles of the pentagram, those upward pointing, points of the pentagram. They hold the crown inside of it like, you know, a cradle, like holding it in their arms, right in between the two horns, if you will. I mean, you just have to look at some of this symbolism and you'll realize how unbelievably dark it is. I mean, the Medal of Valor that is given in the armed forces is an inverted pentagram with the goddess figure. Okay. The sacred feminine energy of the goddess, which is care, which is what it really represents, is the emotional quality of the individual inside the inverted pentagram. Because to get that Medal of Valor, care for other human beings ultimately had to be sacrificed. It had to be put into a satanic state to get somebody to do the types of violent actions that they got them to do by just polarizing the mindset and saying, we're pitting you against them because their government is telling them to do this. And we, as your government, is telling you to stop them or go after them. And of course, it's, sits below an octagon. The octagonal shape is always used to represent mind control. Okay. It's a hypercube in a two-dimensional perspective. The hypercube is the symbol of a never-ending prison-like mindset that you can never escape from. It's a symbol of pure ego identification, an earthbound identified consciousness that never seeks or reaches for anything higher or any higher wisdom or understanding. And that's why they choose the hypercube to represent mind control. The Medal of Valor hangs from a hypercube or an octagon. And inside of it, there is an arrangement of stars, of, I believe it's 13 stars. And this arrangement of these stars is in two squares. Now, two squares, two oblong squares, is another way of looking at or another perspective of the hypercube or the octagon. Okay, so whenever you see two overlapping squares, this is also a symbol that's traditionally used in dark occultism to represent mind control, to represent the control of anything, really. Mental control, physical control, emotional control, and most importantly, spiritual control, owning the soul. Okay, owning the mind, and as a result of owning the mind, owning the behaviors, and as a result of owning both of those things, owning the soul. Because that's what ultimately these people want. You know, they want the soul of human beings destroyed. Make no mistake about it, this is an absolute spiritual war that's going on. And these dark occultists, through getting into the mind of people and giving them false belief systems, own their soul as a result. Now, inside that, on the Medal of Valor, the octagon, okay, which the pendant actually hangs from, which is a inverted pentagram with the Statue of Liberty representing the goddess, the emotional aspect of consciousness inside of the pentagram. Inside the octagon at the top of this badge is, I'm sorry, outside of it, the octagon is inside of this, is the trapezoid. The trapezoid is probably the darkest satanic symbol that is used in all of Satanism. People think, well, the inverted pentagram is the main symbol, or some people look at the inverted cross, the inverted crucifix, as a big symbol of Satanism. These are actually even lesser important. They're lesser symbols of importance in Satanism and dark occultism as the trapezoid. The trapezoid is an equilateral triangle with the top of it lopped off. Okay, so if you look at the trapezoid that's on the back of the $1 bill, okay, with the all-seeing eye over top of it, okay, that represents a prison of souls. It's a trap. That's why they use the shape, the trapezoid. Not only that, but it's this, it represents the Trinity again, which would be the equilateral triangle, but broken. Okay. So you're taking off that top piece, which represents the consciousness being in union with divinity. A lot of people insist that that all seeing eye means the dark occult, or the dark Illuminati, as people refer to them as, the darkly illuminated ones, as they like to see themselves as, because they have the knowledge, but they use it for mechanisms of control and manipulation and enslavement. So they see themselves as enlightened because of what they know. Okay, they're not enlightened. They're not the real illuminated ones. The people who really know what's going on and are trying to free the world from slavery are the true Illuminati, the illuminated ones. Okay, so I hate when they're referred to as this term, because one, this catch-all term Illuminati, it has taken almost like a cartoon-like quality with most people in pop culture. And secondly, it's a misnomer. It's not true. It's not accurate. They're not enlightened. They're not illuminated. You could say that they're darkly illuminated because they hold a lot of knowledge, but they use it for evil purposes. So I would refer to them as the dark Illuminati if you want to refer to that. But this all-seeing eye symbol represents the spark of divinity which exists within us. It represents union with the qualities of the divine, not being the divine, but being like the divine in the world, because you are bringing yourself into accordance and into harmony with natural law, with moral, spiritual law, or what you would call God's law. This eye in the triangle represents the unity consciousness of bringing your thoughts, emotions, and actions into alignment with each other, such that you're being that as you think, so you feel, and so you act, and there is no contradiction between those three modes of consciousness, okay? You're not saying or thinking one way, and then saying and that you feel a certain way about this, you know, concept or behavior, and then you're going to act differently. That would be contradiction or oppositional consciousness. Unity consciousness represented by the eye in the triangle means as you think, so you feel, so you act, and you're not in contradiction between those three aspects of consciousness. So if you take that out of the equation of this equilateral triangle shape, what you're left with at the bottom, if you refer to the reverse side of the $1, of the great seal on the back of the $1 bill on the left-hand side of the bill, you'll see underneath that all-seeing eye is the pyramid. Now, that pyramid is incomplete because the capstone, the eye, isn't joined with it, okay? So it forms, the pyramid part forms a trapezoid. Again, that's the satanic symbol. So on that symbol, you have godlike consciousness represented by the eye, and then satanic consciousness represented by the trapezoid, okay? The trapezoid forms the top piece of the Medal of Valor, this military honor that is given to them. So you have all together, I count 1, 2, 3, 4 absolutely overt dark occultic symbols on this one emblem. The trapezoid, the octagon, which is the hypercube projection, which represents mind control, the two overlapping obverse squares, which represent mind control as well, and then the inverted pentagram, which represents the raising of duality to a high level and conflict and artificial conflict resolution, or the Hegelian dialectic, triumphing over the Trinity, or thought, emotion, and action. So you have the spiritual point of the pentagram, you know, thrust downward, and you have the materialistic points of the pentagram thrust upward. And then inside of that is trapped the goddess that represents care, care for truth, you know, care for what is right, care for the knowing the difference between right and wrong, care for freedom. And, you know, I just can't think of anything more blatantly satanic. I mean, you even have like a trident, a double trident symbol, with a snake wrapped around it, you know, in the middle of the symbol as well. And this is just one example. I mean, you could go on and on and on and on. Look at the checkerboard floor, which is a big symbol in, low-level Freemasonry. And they often don't even tell their low-level initiates what this symbology represents of the black and white checkerboard floor of the Temple of Solomon, or the floor of the house, as it is known in Freemasonry. This is often wrapped around the head of the police. You know, I mean, here in Chicago, they use it on the police's hats. They use it in England, all over the place, all over police, the checkerboard floor, wrapped around the brain.
Base level thinking.
Yep.
I mean, that's, I hammer this point. That's why I wanted to just let you go off on this, because I hammer this all the time. That's the reason. That's the symbology. That's what 666 is. The mark of the beast. That's what it's base level thinking. It, yep. Us, we're the beast. That's what they look at us like cattle. Again, like zombies, like the walking frigging dead. And you're not. You're not, humanity. You're not. Okay. I believe in you. Mark believes in you. We understand your true potential. It's time you did as well. Because the powers that shouldn't be have you thinking of yourselves like they think about you. See, that's the beauty of their whole plan. They know they can't control you themselves. They can't physically dominate over you, because mankind has evolved past that. So now they get you to do it to yourself.
They have to put you into a poisoned worldview mindset where you think, like they think, everybody's just horrific and bad. Nothing can be changed. People just need to be culled or killed off, you know, and what am I going to do about it? That's where they want people. They want people in this mindset of, what can I do about it? Now, I said, you know, they may not be in a lot of fear about what I can do, but hey, I could do a whole lot. I could do a lot of damage to their plan. I could change a lot of people's minds. I'm not going to stop trying.
You already have, dude. So that's why I said they've completely underestimated you and your abilities. I'm going to pause us right there, because I see the break is sneaking up on us. Ladies and gentlemen, don't go anywhere. I urge you to go over to Mark's website, whatonearthishappening.com, and check out all of his podcasts. Go through them in order. It's important. That way it's kind of like taking a class. If you go out of order, it's going to screw you up. It's better to go in order from start to finish. I promise you, you will not be sorry. I'm telling you, Mark's a good personal friend of mine, and he has helped me on my enlightenment throughout the years. You will not be sorry, ladies and gentlemen. Stay tuned. We'll be back in 3 short minutes.
No hate, no hype, no fear.
You're listening to Truth Frequency Radio.
We are TFR.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to hour number 2 of tonight's live edition of Down the Rabbit Hole. I am your host, Popeye, from FederalJack.com. It is February 12th, 2015. Tonight I am hanging out with my good friend, Mark Passio. He's a Jedi of truth. You can't describe him as anything other than that. Mark, you're a Jedi. Just, it is what it is, buddy. So, we've been getting into Satanism, the dark occult. We've been talking about the symbolism, the powers that shouldn't be used on their pets, as they call them. Again, not my words. I don't call you my pets. Okay, police, military. I don't call you my pets. They do. Just remember, they're the ones with the cute little nicknames for you, not me and not Mark. So maybe that's who you should direct your anger at. So Mark, during the break, we were discussing what we were talking about in the first hour. And ladies and gentlemen, if you're just tuning in, go back in the archives and make sure you listen to the whole show because you won't be sorry. We were discussing the checkerboard floor.
Yes.
And I had brought up to you that it's representative of 666. And everybody fears, oh my God, the mark of the beast. I challenge that. The mark of the beast, we are the beast. We are like the beast of burden. We are cattle. That's what they look, we're not, that's not what we really are, but that's what they look at us as. And that's what 666 is. It's representative of base level thinking where they've got humanity now. Walmart on Black Friday is a perfect visual of that. Okay. It's this base level thinking. And that's Satanism, by the way, at its finest, at its most, a visual example is Black Friday. People climbing over somebody having a heart attack and dying so that they themselves can get a cheaper deal on an Xbox. Satanism at its core is the love of oneself only.
Exactly. I mean, I couldn't have worded it any better than that. That is what Satanism is. People think it's about worship of the devil, which is a Christian concept. Now, regardless of whether Satanists look at spiritual entities as real or not, you know, and believe in demons or angels or whatever. One thing that I could definitively tell you is that is not what the ideology of Satanism is about. Practices and ideologies are two different things. Whether certain sects of Satanists do perform rituals or incantations or conjuring or anything like that, okay, that's well and good. That's one thing. But their belief system is all about service to the self only. And that's where they have most people in the world. In service to the self only thinking. That means you're waking up every day and you're thinking about what can I do for me, 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 me. All day long, every day, from the minute you wake up till the minute you go to sleep. That, ladies and gentlemen, is what Satanism really is. That is what the lifestyle of Satanism is about. It's about care for the self only, not care for truth, not care for what's right or wrong, for knowing the difference between right and wrong. Okay. They don't care about that. Not care for justice in the world, you know, not care for rights, for right action, for freedom. None of those things matter. It's all about what can I get? What can I acquire to make me more comfortable, to put me up on a pedestal, to put me up in a position that's better than the next guy. That's all it's about. 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, 365 and a quarter days a year. That's what Satanism is. And if you judge the ideology by that standard, most people in the world are satanic. They live in a satanic mindset. And you know, like you were saying, they refer to the military and the police as their dogs. I never heard them call them the police. I never heard them call, you know, say the armed forces or the people in military or the people in uniform. No, never. They call the Satanists who I worked with in the past called the police our dogs. That was their name for them because they looked at them as pets. Who would sit when told, who would eat when told, who would attack when told, who would back off when told. They are commanded like an animal, like a pet. And that's what they refer to them as, their dogs, because they had them in an animalistic state of consciousness, of, you know, instinct response mechanism, like a Pavlovian dog. You know, that is what they referred to them as. They only ever referred to people in police and military institutions as our dogs, or I often heard the term our pets. Like just outright calling them our pets that we own and we direct and we command as we see fit. And they follow orders on command like well-trained pets, you know, and, you know, this idea of the checkerboard floor. It comes out of the Freemasonic tradition. Now, folks should really try to understand what I'm saying here regarding Freemasonry and don't take it as I'm attacking the entire tradition of Freemasonry. No more than I would attack the entire tradition of any given religion. I'm saying if you buy into it as a dogmatic belief system, then it becomes something that holds you back. There are core truths in all kinds of different mystical and religious traditions. Okay, so there's core truths in Christianity, like the golden rule. You know, don't treat others, in a way that you would not want to be treated. know, people often say it as do unto others as you would have done to yourself. I like the negative aspect of it. You know, if you don't want to be treated a certain way, don't treat other people that way. That's the real golden rule. You know, that's a core philosophical and moral truth within that tradition. So I don't throw out the baby with the bathwater. I'll leave the dogma at the door and I'll leave the calcified belief system at the door, but let's take the grain of truth and move forward with it. You know, the same could be said for Freemasonry or any other tradition for that matter. That's why I take an integral approach when it comes to all information. You know, you have to take the core principles and then leave all the trappings, okay, that don't need, that only weigh you down, okay? And that's what dogma is all about. Dogma weighs you down. That's why, you know, religion is something that will hold you back, but getting to the core principles of truth and morality that lay at the heart of all religious traditions will move you forward. Okay? So, this idea of the checkerboard floor of the house comes from the Freemasonic tradition. And it represents base consciousness or unconsciousness. It represents not knowing the difference between right and wrong, light or darkness, good or evil, represented by the white and black checkered squares that make up the floor. Okay? The light ones would represent truth, goodness, morality, knowledge of what is right. And then the black square would represent evil, chaos, you know, wrongdoing, darkness, etc. And by combining them together, what they're basically saying is this is a person in the state of consciousness that can't separate the light from the dark, that doesn't know the difference between right and wrong. They're in a earthbound, ego-identified state of consciousness, of unconsciousness. Okay? So that's what that represents. Now, where it's used is on the first degree tracing board of Freemasonry, which if you look at, has three pillars with a ladder. The three pillars represent, again, the aspects of consciousness that have to be unified so that you could climb the ladder, okay, to get out of that base consciousness, which is the floor of the house. And when you get up to the top of it, you're in the realm where the quote unquote gods are at. This is godlike consciousness because you've received the light of the sun, which is the truth. And it's the truth about morality, about moral law, about what I refer to as natural law, the objective knowledge of the difference between right and wrong behavior. Okay. Which is what conscience is. You've been born into conscience. Born again into a state of conscience, of being a being that cares about the difference between right and wrong and knows it definitively. And that's what this process of resurrection, of going up the ladder in this symbolic storyboard called the first degree tracing board of Freemasonry represents. You know, you're in the Temple of Solomon, the sun and the moon. And that's the brain, the left brain, the sun, the logical or masculine side of the brain, and then the right brain, the moon, the sacred feminine, or the compassionate, nurturing, and intuitive side of the brain. That's why it's the temple. It's in between the temple. It's about the brain. It's about making a better mind, about coming into higher level knowledge and awareness. It's a beautiful allegorical tradition if it's properly understood. Unfortunately, a lot of those high level true occult teachings are never given to these low-level initiates because the lodge tradition is totally taken over and infiltrated by dark occultists in many cases. So, you know, what we have to understand about the occult in general is it's just knowledge. That's all it means. It means hidden. And it's simply knowledge about how the human mind works. It's knowledge about how the laws of nature work. When you put those together, it's all about how free will works in conjunction with natural law. That is ultimately what it is all about. How free will works in conjunction with the laws of cause and effect or consequences. Okay? So this tracing board has these three pillars. And, you know, what the two pillars represent is you have to come in and they're seemingly divided, the masculine and the feminine. They have to be wed or unified. Okay, so we bring them into harmony, into unity consciousness. We have the sacred masculine aspects of the personality, and we have the sacred feminine aspects. We need to bring them all together and work with them all. So we're working with logic and scientific type thought, but we're also working with creative and intuitive capacities. Okay. We could also say that these two pillars represent what I call the pillars of enlightenment, the sacred feminine principle and the sacred masculine principle. The sacred feminine principle is the principle of non-aggression, or in other words, the golden rule. Do no harm to other sentient beings. Don't do to other beings what you would not want done to yourself. If it causes harm and suffering, don't do it to others. That's the sacred feminine pillar. Then the sacred masculine pillar is the right to self-defense. If you are being accosted by violence being conducted against you from another, you maintain the inherent right to defensively use force in order to defend your rights, your life, your property, etc. So that's the sacred masculine principle. You put those together, you have a being that isn't going to be engaged in the control dynamic at all. He's not going to be, he or she is not going to be trying to control others or coerce others or do violence to others, nor is he going to accept control, coercion, violence, and slavery. And that's the kind of being that they fear the most. So the middle pillar represents this synthesis or the unity between these two modalities of consciousness or these two principles. Okay? And that's what real enlightenment is about. Now, if we move all of these ideas and not only that, but when we take the numerology, as you suggested earlier, Popeye, the 666 idea, you know, it's a mistranslation in the New Testament that this is the number of a man. This is what is always, how it's always translated in the, book of Revelation out of the original Hebrew. This number 666 is not said in the book of Revelation to be the number of a man. It is said to be the number of man, meaning of humanity, of humankind, of the human species. Okay? There's a very important thing and a hugely mistranslated concept in that text. It is not the number of a man. It is the number of mankind, of humanity. And there's a reason it's the number of humanity. 666 represents the failure in thought, emotion, and action. Each number represents failure of an aspect of consciousness or the deadening of that aspect of consciousness, the incompletion, the undevelopment, okay? The not being used. And therefore, that's why it is considered the number of humanity. Humanity is the beast. Humanity is the dead. They are in that base consciousness in the aggregate. That's not to say some people aren't awakened or enlightened. We're talking about in the aggregate numbers. If you take the species as a whole and you looked at it from afar, it would largely look completely unconscious. Okay? Now, if that is base consciousness, 666, this sacred or holy number in different forms of religion and mysticism and occultism, 777, has been traditionally used to represent godlike consciousness, or in other words, being like the divine, not being the divine. Again, there's a very big difference between being God, okay, which no one is, and being like the divine, embodying the qualities or living your life in a divine way. Okay, having aspects of consciousness which are reflective of the Creator, reflective of the light of the Creator. Okay? So that's what we have to understand 777 traditionally has been used to mean as a numerological symbol. It means getting out of ignorance, going from that 6 to that 7. You're activating. It's a number of activation of each of these modes of consciousness. So you're going from ignorance to true holistic intelligence. Then the second aspect of consciousness, which was a 6 in 666, the middle 6, is apathy. Where you're getting out of apathy and you're going to true care. You're activating true care. Heart-based emotion. And then the third 6 represents failure in action. Cowardice and laziness. Well, then you're activating that in the form of courage and willpower. It's the activation of the masculine aspect of consciousness. Just like care is the activation of the feminine aspect of consciousness. So that 777 would represent being in divine-like consciousness. Now, if we put all of these things together, all of these things together, okay, and we look at the Fraternal Order of Police's emblem, we see the checkered floor of the house, and then we see the unity pillar. There's three pillars, but the pillar of unity is below the pillars of duality. See, once again, it's the idea of raising duality and conflict up above unity and oneness. This is a repeated theme in dark occultism. And this is why you see it repeated on police's insignias. Then you have the numbers, the letters FOP for Fraternal Order of Police. Okay, FOP. But if you take those numbers and apply their gematria equivalents, gematria is occult numerology. And how you do this is you count which letter in the alphabet the F is. So F, A, B, C, D, E, F. F is 6. It's the 6th letter of the alphabet. So you're going to ascribe the number 6 to that F. Then O. O is the 15th letter of the English alphabet. So since you have two numbers, a 1 and a 5 in 15, you're going to add those together. And you come up with another 6. And then P is the 16th letter of the alphabet. And you're going to add the 1 and the 6 together. And you're going to get a 7. Well, we don't have 666. We have 667. Very significant number. Because what they're saying to the police here, what this is symbolically representative of, and whether this is deliberately designed like this or it's synchromystic, is neither here nor there. It's still telling us something extraordinarily important if we understand how to decode it. That's failure in thought, meaning they're not really holistically intelligent. They're still ignorant. Failure in emotion, certainly don't care about truth, don't care about justice, true justice, don't care about natural law, don't care about the difference between right and wrong. They're still in that state of apathy. But then action is raised to a higher point, to a higher number, to the 7 instead of the 6. See, so the number of the police in the dark occultist's eyes is not 666, it's 667. It's just one more than the average dead of the public. Now, that doesn't mean that they don't hate these people even more than the public, but it means they'll use them for their purposes because they see a little bit more value in what they can get out of them than even the public, because they're the 667. And what is that thing that they're going to use them for? Their actions, their muscle, their masculine presence, the behavior that they can get them to conduct through mind control, through keeping them in base consciousness and dualistic thinking, represented by the checkered floor and the dual pillars raised above the pillar of unity. 667 would be a being that is still ignorant, is still apathetic, but is taking action in spite of their ignorance and their undeveloped true care, their apathy. So while thought and emotion are still dead within them, they're acting in a capacity of order followers, following their orders and just performing the rote actions that they are commanded to perform like robots. So that gives them that one more number up from 666 to 667. And I would say it's the most dangerous place to be, because you could look at somebody who's completely dead as not being able to do any harm. But somebody who's still taking action and doesn't care or know the truth, doesn't care for the truth and doesn't know the truth, is extraordinarily dangerous. And that's why that is the number of the police, 667, not 666. They're used as the buffer between the dark occultists, the darkly illuminated ones, and the public, to basically protect these dark occultists' interests and stomp all over the rights of the public in the process. And that's how they're seen. They're seen as attack dogs, guard dogs, that are guarding their interests and attacking anybody who gets in the way of these high-level financiers, occultists, so-called elite members of society, getting their way and getting what they want. And the police go right along in hand with it. To round out this symbol, you see the all-seeing eye symbol at the bottom of the emblem on one of the two points that represent duality, and then a Masonic handshake, because of course the Fraternal Order of Police is a Masonic affiliate, and I would say it is a dark Masonic affiliate, what I call dark masonry, okay, and it is an affiliate of the Dark Lodge system. Okay, you can't look at Freemasonry as one thing, because true esoteric Freemasonry teaches moral lessons and it teaches natural law. It does teach the laws of morality when it's properly understood and decoded. In the modern lodge system, this understanding is largely lost, and it's largely infiltrated by dark occultists who are not teaching their initiates anything valuable regarding what real esoteric Freemasonry is truly about. Therefore, they're not getting any of those lessons, and it's just acting as a club where deeds can be performed in secret and deals can be made, and, you know, the type of thing where, you know, I scratch my back, you scratch yours, you know, an old boys club.
A secret society inside of a secret society, as Albert Pike referenced.
Sure. Studying that sigil, the Fraternal Order of Police's logo, if you understand how to decode it, is very powerful. You know, and it shows you just how deep dark occultism is embedded in the symbolism of the police and military. I mean, all you have to do, one of the first places you could start is the Air Force logo. I think that's one of the most blatant examples of a demon. You're looking at a demon's face. The demon is Chort. It's a demon that's worshipped in Satanism. Well, worshipped, conjured, or looked at as an archetypal figure that they summon the energy of. And it's spelled T-C-H-O-R-T, Chort. This is the face of Chort in the Air Force logo. Chort was a demon that flew in the sky with huge wings, you know? And you're looking at Chort's face, and people still can't see the demon in the logo of the Air Force. It is a demon face. The entire logo, it's two eyes. They'll say, oh, it's a star with wings. Step back and look at it for a minute. Step back away from it for a minute. Stop thinking that it represents what you think it represents. It's a demon face with eyes and horns and teeth. I mean, it's right there. It's right there in front of people's eyes, and they still can't see that when they look at the Air Force's logo, they're looking at a demon's face. It's right out in the open. Right out in the open. And yet, they'll say, no, 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 it isn't that. Like, they could have designed it any possible way with all the permutations that they could have designed it with stars, birds, aircraft, whatever. And yet they chose to make this simple outline of a demon face. And you're telling me that's accidental? Yeah, sure it is. Yeah, because, you know, it's the same accidental way that they accidentally designed a swastika for an Air Force base down in, on the West Coast, down near San Diego. It was just an accident that got designed that way. They said, oh yeah, our architects didn't notice it. Yeah, sure.
You remember when the new Air Force logo came out?
I do not.
It was right after 9/11. And the official story, I remember the official story was some young, I think they said it was an Air Force. He was in the Air Force, but I can't remember if he was a cadet or if he was some IT guy, and he did graphic design supposedly in, you know, on the side or something like that. And he's the one that came up with the new logo or something. And
I'm sure they loved him for it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Sure.
I'm sure he wasn't involved in any capacity in Satanism. It's nothing to see here.
That's what I'm saying. Like, even if he really did make it, like, they probably made it themselves and didn't just attributed this happy-go-lucky little story to it to push it. But it's just interesting that the timing of it was right after 9/11, which anybody that wants to investigate 9/11 and understand what was really going on, you have to listen to the broadcast Mark and I did about it. In fact, I re-aired that broadcast this past year on September 11th. It was the two-year anniversary from when you and I did it, Mark. And we broke down what 9/11 really was, the occult aspects of 9/11, it's called. You can just go on YouTube and type in the occult aspects of 9/11, and it'll come up. I urge you to listen to that show, because 9/11 in and of itself was this huge cremation of care ceremony.
That's right.
They tried to destroy care. They tried to take out the sacred feminine, and that's why you see this overbalance of masculinity with cops beating and shooting people, and you see things like, interestingly enough, the Air Force changing their logo to a demon face after such an event. So it's interesting how all this ties together. Mark, I'm going to pause us right there because we got a break sneaking up. Man, final segment coming up already. This show just went by mad fast. Again, if you want to research the stuff that we're talking about, go to federaljack.com, type in Mark Passio in the search bar. All of my interviews with him in the past will come up. I urge you to listen to them. listen to the 9/11 broadcast we did. It's called The Occult Aspects of 9/11. And go to Mark's website and listen to his podcast, whatonearthishappening.com. We will be right back. We are back, ladies and gentlemen. Final segment tonight's live edition of DTRH, hanging out with my good friend Mark Passio. Mark, before we get back into it, I want to say thank you so much for giving me 2 hours of your time tonight to sit down and go over this stuff. You know, I already know this stuff on a very deep level, and I talk about it all the time, but having you on makes it much easier to present this stuff in more of a scholarly type fashion to the audience, because I can go back and forth with you. And, you know, we're both on the same level, so we both get it. And it just makes it easier to present to the audience instead of me just referencing, because I constantly reference you. I'm constantly saying, you know, go back and listen to this show I did with Mark Passio, or Mark Passio this, or go to What on Earth is Happening. You're probably one of the people I reference the most on the broadcast. So instead of actually just referencing you, it's nice to have you on the other end. So when I actually mention you, you can respond back. So thank you, brother.
Well, I deeply appreciate that. It's my pleasure. I thank you for inviting me on and providing the platform.
It's always an honor, dude. Again, you're always enlightening to the audience, to say the least. So let's get back into it. We got about 20-something minutes left, about 25 minutes for the end of the broadcast. Since we've been talking about all these symbols and how the dark occult Satanists think about the military and the police and the general public, perhaps we should cover the bases a little bit of the dark occult Satanists themselves. Now, you actually, again, have this rare perspective that not many people do, because you were part of this at a very low level, and then, like, again, once you realized what was going on, you were like, you know, I'm out. Although you did say that it took a while for you to get to that point, and kind of like kicking and screaming on the way out. And I think that's actually good that you had that experience, because that's why you're so passionate about pushing the truth, because you went through that, and, you know, that tore you out of that paradigm, that false paradigm that you were in, and it helped create the warrior for truth that you are today, brother. So, you know, although it sounds screwed up to say this, I'm kind of glad that you went through that horrible, tough experience, because it created the truth warrior that we have today.
Yes.
So.
I absolutely concur and understand the sentiment that was expressed in, and you're absolutely correct. You know, that was like a sword being forged in fire, you know, and that is what tempered me to understand what's going on in the world. People think, well, you just got out of Satanism all at once. No, it didn't happen in one day, ladies and gentlemen. That was a years-long process of getting out of that mindset. And knowledge brought me – suffering combined with the intake of knowledge is what got me out of that mindset over years. Not days, not weeks, not months, but years of my life. You know, I didn't just suddenly wake up one morning and say, oh, I'm not a Satanist anymore. I don't think this way anymore. All the years of, you know, accepting this type of a belief system, oh, that's all just magically gone, and I'm totally enlightened now. I know the difference between right and wrong behavior now. I know what natural law is about now. You know, I know all the ways that I was previously wrong suddenly overnight. No. I knew a few aspects of things that showed me enough to say, hey, I got to stop my involvement with these people. And that was about it. Then, you know, it's okay, boy, out the door you go. Don't let it hit you in the rear end on the way out either. And, you know, now I'm, you know, in between worlds, you know, because I'm not going back to the old world of organized, distorted religious dogma, nor am I going to go into this realm of the exact antithesis of that, which is this, you know, not just atheistic, but this, you know, totally control-based paradigm of we're the masters and we're going to make everybody else our slaves, you know, and we'll give them all kinds of fake dogmatic religions, and we'll give them a fake monetary system that only enslaves them further, and, you know, give them all forms of mind control and poison them, you know, with their the garbage food that we push on them to eat, and, you know, the radionic weaponry, and, you know, EMF, you know, pollution, and, you know, hammering the mind with all kinds of frequencies, et cetera. You know, I don't want to be involved in any of this on either side. So then I'm kind of a man, you know, with no comfort and lost between worlds for years. And what brought me out of that condition of ignorance and suffering was knowledge. That's when I went into deep study, really deep study. And I started to become obsessive with studying and knowledge and just reading voraciously, you know, insane amounts of material, downloading things, you know, watching documentaries, listening to lectures, going to lectures whenever I could find someone that I felt was important, you know, hear, speak, and understand what they were talking about. Reading book after book after book after book, sequestering myself, isolating myself from the rest of the world to a point where friends and family members often thought, hey, what's wrong with you? You know, you don't do anything. You're sitting in basically in one place alone. Just, you know, what are you doing with all your time? And the answer was reading, getting my mind back, reclaiming my mind, trying to understand what I had just been a part of, you know, and that wasn't an overnight process, folks. That was years long, that process. And, you know, a lot of those beliefs went very with difficulty. They went because when you're so attached to a religion and a belief system, you know, usually it's only suffering that's going to rip you away from it. And that's how it went with me. And, you know, it had to come to a point where I was suffering so badly that the only two alternatives were, you know, death, the grave, or the ladder to higher consciousness, getting out of the pit, getting out of the abyss by making an actual effort of willpower to climb out of that pit by nourishing myself with knowledge, with the light of truth. And that's what it took, you know. And again, for me, and I consider myself a reasonably intelligent human being with a pretty decent capacity for learning, it still took me many years. I would say that process went for between 6 and 8, maybe even 9 years, you know, at least 6 years minimum.
And your experience is like a physical visual representative of a representation, I should say, of what my speech that I put together with Payday Monsanto years ago, my original intro. I call it Inches. It's an edited version of the speech that Al Pacino gives in Any Given Sunday. And he says,
with all seeing eye behind him.
Yeah. And isn't it ironic that he says at the point in that movie when he says, we're in hell right now, gentlemen, that's on the wall over top of a cross.
Nope.
I'm just saying, I wonder what Oliver Stone was trying to let you know with symbology in there.
Okay.
But,
great speech too.
Oh, it is. And that's why I edited it up and used it. And in there, he talks about climbing out of hell inch by inch. And that's exactly what you did. That's exactly what people are doing by educating themselves and relying on personal responsibility and not relying on these false saviors, whether they be politicians or somebody that comes up and puts on a headset too and says, I'm a radio show host. Listen to me. I have the ultimate truth. If they're not telling you that you're the solution to the problem,
right,
they're part of the problem.
Exactly.
It's that simple.
And I'm so glad you brought this up because, you know, so many people attempt to put different people up on pedestals, and that's the worst thing that you could possibly do. You got to do your own research. You have to use your own willpower, and that's the only thing that's going to make a difference in the world. You know, a savior is not coming to rescue us from our own ignorance. Okay. We have to do that for ourselves. You know, I think one of the worst doctrines in all of religion is the doctrine of salvationism. Personally, I'll just come blatantly out and say it just like that. I think salvationist forms of religion of all kind are the worst form of mental bondage and slavery in the world. Because what this is doing is making you abdicate your personal responsibility to actually make an effort to change things in the real world for yourself. And you're just abdicating that to some other entity and saying, that being is going to do this for me. Or I just need to believe in that being, or I need to accept him, he, she, it as my savior. Okay. And that'll make everything okay. No, it won't. Period. It won't, will not. See, you know, and most people will grasp that I'm really trying to get at salvationist Christianity with this. And it's true because, you know, this whole idea that all you need to do is believe in Jesus as your personal savior, You know, I mean, where did that notion even come from? You know, I want anybody to find in the New Testament words attributed to Jesus where it says, worship me as your savior and you will be all right. That is the path to freedom. That is the path to goodness. That is the path to order. You know, how about trying to live in the way? How about having Jesus as your example, whether you believe in him as a real man or an allegory, an allegorical figure, you know, of truth? You know, how about live according to the teachings that were espoused by that great teacher? You know, be like him in your personality. Be like him in your everyday actions. Now, don't try to worship somebody. Worship isn't required, you know, and the salvationists, you know, that's what they're all about. It's brainwashing. They've been brainwashed. They're a member of a cult. It's not a religion. That's a cult. It's not a true religion. It's a cult belief system, salvationism. And all it does is abdicate personal responsibility. You want to know in your own scriptures for any salvationists out there listening, in your own scripture, what the prescription made by Jesus in the New Testament, when he is asked by his own apostles in this story, what is required of us? What do we need to do to be free? His answer is, know the truth. Know the truth, and the truth will set you free. He doesn't say, bow down and worship me. He says, know the truth, which means you need to change your mindset from where it's at in untruth. He was an example of living truth. That's why he referred to himself as the way, truth, and light. You know, the idea is, know the truth, and then you'll be set free by the truth. You know, you very hear any salvationist Christians mentioning that, you know? It's all, for them, it's all about abdicating your responsibility to some higher figure or higher authority. And where's free will in that equation? You know, you'll hear them often poo-pooing free will, you know, saying that's not important or we shouldn't put that up on some kind of a pedestal. That's the gift of the creator of the universe, free will, for us to be able to make a choice to align our decisions to right or wrong behavior, to align our decisions of our behaviors to natural law or not, and therefore to create order by aligning our behavior to what is right, or to create chaos by aligning it to what is wrong, or refusing to align it to what is right. You know, this is the real path out of the darkness. This is the real path out of the world of slavery. Not worshiping some entity, you know. You want to do that? Fine, do that too. Have your belief systems, you know. I'm not saying anybody isn't entitled to their religious belief systems, but when you try to make the entire game, the whole thing, about nothing but taking your free will responsibility and placing it into someone else's hands and saying, you're going to do my work for me. You're going to save the world somehow, and I don't really need to learn anything new. I don't need to readjust my emotions. I don't need to readjust my behaviors or my actions, but you know, that somehow supernatural or otherworldly entity is going to do that for me, then I have a big problem with that belief system. Because all that's doing is perpetuating more and more ignorance in our society. Because it's a whole bunch of people that don't know the truth.
Because it abdicates responsibility to a higher entity. And if it's not religion, it's politics. Or if it's not that, even in the quote-unquote freedom movement, as you coined the term, the My Freedom Movement, people put people up on pedestals. And then they get let down when those people act like humans. That's perpetuating the same cycle, just with different characters, different players in the game. We need to look beyond that. What did Einstein say? You can't solve a problem with the same level of thinking that created it. So we have to step outside of this box, outside of this cycle that we're in, and start to do things differently. That's literally what I mean by being the change. Again, living in a perspective change. Unlike exactly. You've ever done before, and actually truly living it. You know what I mean, Mark? Living it, like you feel it with your soul, type of living it.
You know, I'm glad you brought up the idea of people, even within the truth movement, you know, putting heroes up on some kind of a pedestal, you know, and then, oh, well, then it didn't work out, or, you know, how they planned it, or the person, you know, proved not to be the exact perfect figure that they were thought to be. You know, no one's perfect in this three-dimensional reality. If you're expecting perfection here, you're going to be sorely disappointed, because it doesn't exist. You know, we could do the best that we can with what we are given to work with. We could do the best that we can with our time. We can make a true effort. You know, I was saying to some friends the other day that I still really don't think that most people understand the message I'm trying to put forward in the world, because the vast, vast, overwhelming majority of the stuff of the correspondence that I ever receive from people is, thank you so much for what you're doing. You know, it helped me to understand this, that, and that. You know, what I'm looking for is not praise. I don't want to be popular. I'm not trying to, you know, win friends or win support from people. I want people to understand what's going on and then help do something about it. I tell people, I don't want their thanks, praise, and support. I need your help. I need your help to help influence other people to go through the same change that we've gone through in our understanding. You know, that's what the great work is. The great work is helping other people out of the pit, out of the abyss, helping them to climb up out of hell. That's what the great work is. You know, so get to work doing that. I always, whenever I get an email thanking me, praising me, whatever, making a comment, I will, if the person uses their full name, I'll type it into Google to try to see what they're doing in the world. You know, I type my name and type your name in double quotes into Google, whatever search engine you like, start page, Yahoo, doesn't make a difference. Just pick a search engine that you like. Doesn't have to be Google. Type your name in double quotation marks, wrapped in double quotation marks. Okay. Now, my name brought up almost 250,000 results the other day, which I was happy to see. You know, I typed in somebody's name like Michael Tesarion. He had like 375,000 results for his name, you know. I typed in David Icke. He had like 4.5 million results under his name wrapped in double quotes. I was like, wow. You know, that's an indicator of what you're really doing and the impact you're making in the world. How publicly, it's not, you could do that with any public celebrity that's not talking about anything of value. Okay, you could do that. You know, celebrities and politicians have millions and millions of views. I'm talking about people who actually are paying attention and want to do something and want to try to change the world for the better. You know, that to me is an indicator of, is your work out there? You know, and it's like most people who write to me, they're not doing anything themselves. They're not putting it back out there. You knowing it is not the end, folks. You knowing this is the beginning of your journey. You have to go and tell other people. You have to go and awaken other minds. You have to go and unlock other hearts. You know, that's how this change is going to happen. That's what the great work is.
Yeah. You're only in the first Matrix movie. You're only at the end of the first Matrix movie when you wake up. Okay.
That's right.
At the end of the first one, ladies and gentlemen. We haven't won yet. Okay. That's the whole beauty of this experience, is it's a journey that everybody will go through, and that if you open your mind and you take personal responsibility, you will be amazed at the information you'll receive, the love you'll receive, the knowledge that you'll receive, but you have to be willing to do it. Nobody's going to come do it for you. Okay.
That's right.
That's what you have to, go back and listen to again, go to federaljack.com, type in the search bar, type in, decoding the matrix, deciphering the matrix. Just type in Mark Passio matrix into the search bar in Federal Jack, and it'll bring up the show Mark and I did about this. Go listen to it. Go on YouTube and watch Mark's presentation about this. Okay. You have to take the time to research this to understand the level that we're talking about. So this is the solution. We're telling you how to solve this. Okay. At the end of the day, the simple answer is your personal responsibility, you being the solution to the problem. As I say at the end of every broadcast, I always say the solutions to our problems are an inside job, right? I coined that little ditty because I want you to understand that you are the solution. And as soon as you realize that, you're going to make these people in power irrelevant. Their threats of violence won't mean anything if they don't have people to back them up.
That's right. if no one follows those orders, they cannot be carried out. They cannot be put into physical manifestation.
Right. Let them try to do it themselves. Like, I doubt Henry Kissinger or any of them are going to be like, I'll pull the trigger myself. Right. You might get one person. You might get two. And then everybody else is going to tear you limb from limb. They know that. That's why they have to have their military and their police. And, Mark, we only got about 6 minutes left.
Sure.
So I just want to throw this out there really quick, because I know we were going to talk about the occult, but we ended up getting onto solutions, which is actually more important than talking about, like, you know, the Satanism itself, because Mark and I have touched on that. Again, go back and listen to the one broadcast we did. I think it was October 28th, if I remember correctly. It was October of like 2011, 2012. Mark and I did this amazing broadcast where he got into detail about the application he had to fill out to get into, being a Satanist at the time, and just everything. It's, you have to go back and listen to it. It's about two and a half hours. If you want to understand, you got to take the time. We couldn't even stick it into a 20-minute segment. So to me, solutions are more important. But the one thing I wanted to throw out there really quick before I run out of time is, I just want to reiterate the point that in this dark occult network, whatever you want to call it, and this includes the people that partake in satanic, you know, rituals and murder and sacrifice and things like that, and the ritual abuse of children in certain situations, there are people, and I, because you are a former Satanist yourself, I want you to be able to, you know, give your take on this really quick, but there are high-ranking people in this. Like you said, The police departments are controlled by these three people. So you have judges, lawyers, doctors, sheriffs. So
every institutional walk of life that you could think of, politics, religion, banking, media, law enforcement, entertainment, technology, media, law, military, medicine, education. If you name the institution, there are Satanists that are not only in high-ranking positions of power and influence within those institutions, but they are at the apex controlling those institutions, without any question. They've turned this society into a satanic society. You can't do that without influence at the highest levels of positions of power in all worldly institutions. And the most important out of those that I feel is the schooling system. Because if you can get the minds of the children when they're young, you're indoctrinating them into your way of looking at the world, into the tenets of Satanism, of self-preservation above morality, moral relativism, social Darwinism, and eugenics, the four pillars of Satanism, as we've covered on past shows. And that's what they're doing. They're indoctrinating people into their belief system at a lower level. And that's how they can get mindless, willing followers to go along with this cult belief system. You know, because I call that mini-me Satanism. They're indoctrinating people at a much lower, watered-down level into their belief system. They strongly, firmly believe in it at a much higher level. And these people form the rank and file that just go along to get along within this perverse, immoral system that they've built up all around them. And none of them ever even understand how, to what extent they're not even thinking their own thoughts. They're accepting a belief system that was propagated down to them because they grew up from birth in a cult. You know, that's what this society basically is. This society is, at a very large scale, a satanic cult. It's a satanic system that we are living in. And unless people wake up to that by understanding the knowledge, the tenets of this religion, they're never going to understand how their mind has been controlled and how they've been duped. You know, that's why you have to read into and understand what Satanism really is about. You know, and I suggest doing that through my work. And there's other people who are exposing it as well and exposing it just how much it has its tentacles into every single social institution and walk of life that you can think of.
It does. And it's absolutely, it's absolutely shocking. Even to me who knows this stuff, when you actually see how far those roots, Mark, those tentacles of that tumor go, it's absolutely shocking. And I'm not saying that as radio hyperbole. I mean, people will literally be like, holy crap. That's why they get away with the things they get away with.
That's right.
That's why it's so insane.
Look at these pedophile scandals going on in London right now, and all over England, really. You know, they're all getting away with that because these Satanists, these dark occultists who are conducting these pedophile rings own the police and they own the government. They are in the police and the government. A lot of the stories of the children who are coming out and telling these horrific, abuse, recountings, are explaining there were police there. There were politicians there. There were bankers there. There were heads of school systems there. There were church leaders there. You know, they're explaining that they're telling their stories and telling who was actually involved. And it's all these people from all these positions of power in every social institution in the entire country. You know, it's just as I and other people who have been exposing Satanism for years have told people, you know, but they don't want to listen to people who are involved in it firsthand. You know, they're going to have to suffer enough, unfortunately, I think, is what it's going to take. And it's like, haven't we suffered enough already is my, you know, question.
Oh,
you know?
I agree, dude. We have suffered enough. I got to cut us off because the break is sneaking up on us in 30 seconds. Mark, an honor, my brother. Thank you.
Popeye, thanks so much for having me on. My main website, folks, is whatonearthishappening.com. Popeye, thanks again for the opportunity.
Anytime, brother. I'm going to have you back on again in the next few months, about a month and a half, 2 months, and we're going to get you on Freaky Friday. Ladies and gentlemen, stay tuned. The Rundown Live crew is coming up. As I always tell you, the solutions to our problems are an inside job. Be the superhero I know you all have inside of yourselves. I love you all. I'll catch you all again live Thursday, or live next Tuesday, actually. I'm out.
I know you're out there. I can feel you now. I know that you're afraid. You're afraid of us. You're afraid of change. I don't know the future. I didn't come here to tell you how this is going to end. I came here to tell you how it's going to begin. I'm going to show these people what you don't want them to see. I'm going to show them a world without you. A world without rules and controls, without borders or boundaries. A world where anything is possible. Where we go from there is a choice I leave to you.
President John F. Kennedy.
Ladies and gentlemen, the very word secrecy is repugnant in a free and open society. And we are, as a people, inherently and historically opposed to secret societies, to secret oaths, and to secret proceedings. We decided long ago that the dangers of excessive and unwarranted concealment of pertinent facts far outweighed the dangers which are cited to justify it. Even today, there is little value in opposing the threat of a closed society by imitating its arbitrary restrictions. Even today, there is little value in ensuring the survival of our nation if our traditions do not survive with it. And there is very grave danger that an announced need for increased security will be seized upon by those anxious to expand its meaning to the very limits of official censorship and concealment. That I do not intend to permit to the extent that it's in my control. And no official of my administration, whether his rank is high or low, civilian or military, should interpret my words here tonight as an excuse to censor the news, to stifle dissent, to cover up our mistakes, or to withhold from the press and the public the facts they deserve to know. For we are opposed around the world by a monolithic and ruthless conspiracy that relies primarily on covert means for expanding its sphere of influence, on infiltration instead of invasion, on subversion instead of elections, on intimidation instead of free choice, on guerrillas by night instead of armies by day. It is a system which has conscripted vast human and material resources into the building of a tightly knit, highly efficient machine that combines military, diplomatic, intelligence, economic, scientific, and political operations. Its preparations are concealed, not published. Its mistakes are buried, not headlined. Its dissenters are silenced, not praised. not praised. No expenditure is questioned. No rumor is printed. No secret is revealed. No president should fear public scrutiny of his program. For from that scrutiny comes understanding. And from that understanding comes support or opposition. And both are necessary. I am not asking your newspapers to support an administration, but I am asking your help in the tremendous task of informing and alerting the American people. For I have complete confidence. And the response and dedication of our citizens, whenever they are fully informed. I not only could not stifle controversy among your readers, I welcome it. This administration intends to be candid about its errors. For as a wise man once said, an error doesn't become a mistake until you refuse to correct it. We intend to accept full responsibility for our errors, and we expect you to point them out when we miss them. Without debate, without criticism, no administration and no country can succeed, and no republic can survive. That is why the Athenian lawmaker Solon decreed it a crime for any citizen to shrink from controversy. And that is why our press was protected by the First Amendment, the only business in America specifically protected by the Constitution, not primarily to amuse and entertain, not to emphasize the trivial and the sentimental, not to simply give the public what it wants, but to inform, to arouse, to reflect, to state our dangers and our opportunities, to indicate our crises and our choices, to lead, mold, educate, and sometimes even anger public opinion. This means greater coverage and analysis of international news. For it is no longer far away and foreign, but close at hand and local. It means greater attention to improved understanding of the news, as well as improved transmission. And it means, finally, that government at all levels must meet its obligation to provide you with the fullest possible information outside the narrowest limits of national security. And so it is to the printing press, to the recorder of man's deeds, the keeper of his conscience, the courier of his news, that we look for strength and assistance, confident that with your help, man will be what he was born to be, free and independent.
Either we heal as a team, we're going to crumble. Inch by inch, play by play, till we're finished. We're in hell right now, gentlemen, believe me. And we can stay here, get the shit kicked out of us, or we can fight our way back into the light. We can climb out of hell, one inch at a time. You know, when you get old in life, things get taken from you. I mean, that's part of life. But you only learn that when you start losing stuff. You find out life's a game of inches. So is football. Because in either game, life or football, the margin for error is so small. I mean, one half a step too late or too early, and you don't quite make it. One half second too slow, too fast, you don't quite catch it. The inches we need are everywhere around us. They're in every break of the game, every minute, every second. On this team, we fight for that inch. On this team, we tear ourselves and everyone else around us to pieces for that inch. We claw our fingernails for that inch. Because we know when we add up all those inches, that's going to make the fucking difference between winning and losing. It's the guy who's willing to die who's going to win that itch. And I know if I'm going to have any life anymore, it's because I'm still willing to fight and die for that itch. Because that's what living is. The 6 inches in front of your face. Now I can't make you do it.
No, you don't.
You're going to see a guy who will sacrifice himself for this team because he knows when it comes down to it, you're going to do the same for him. That's the team, gentlemen. And either we heal now as a team, or we will die as individuals.
Ideas are bulletproof.